I thought I should be sensitive, accessible, and alive in order to enable the baby to wake up and to start moving something inside that will bring up her potentials and start to be.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and off the couch. This is a podcast in which we will discover the world of psychoanalysis that lives beyond the couch, beyond the individual consultation room. We will meet psychoanalysts who work in dialysis units, prenatal clinics, corporate boardrooms, community centers, humanitarian organizations, and with vineyard workers, just to name a few. We hope these conversations expand our awareness of how broadly psychoanalytic thinking extends into our communities. Come listen, enjoy, and please share your comments on the webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz. I'm an analyst on the faculty of the Psychoanalytic Association of New York and the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia. My guest today is Chamital Raz Shiloach, a clinical psychologist and a training and supervising psychoanalyst at the Israeli Psychoanalytic Society. She is the founder and director of the Multicultural Center for Parent-Infant Psychotherapy in Yafo, Israel, which will be the focus of our conversation today. She teaches widely in Israel, just to mention a few of the programs she's involved in, at the Tel Aviv University Postgraduate Psychoanalytic Psychotherapy Program in the Sackler Faculty of Medicine, the Israel Winnicott Center for Postgraduate Studies in Psychoanalytic Psychotherapy, the Interdisciplinary College Herzliya, the Institute of Infancy, and the Academic College of Tel Aviv Yafo, the School of Behavioral Science. It is not surprising that she is a sought-after teacher. As you listen to today's interview, you will really hear a master clinician describe her involvement with a very difficult, challenging situation with a mother and a young daughter, a frozen mother and a frozen daughter. And Chamital brings not only deep emotional connection to this couple and the work that they're doing, but also deeply thought out cognitive thinking as well. And it isn't often that you find them combined. There are people who feel very strongly about the work, and there are people who think very deeply about the work, and it's special when you get someone who does both. And it was a real pleasure for me to encounter this work, and I hope you find it as moving and inspiring as I did. Here's my interview. Chamital, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hi, Harvey. Nice to meet you again.
Yes. The daycare center that we're going to learn about today seems to me to be a fascinating place. You have children and families from all over the world, from different cultures, different ethnicities, different religions, and even different languages. So I picture it as being a very alive, vibrant institution. And at the same time, as a clinician, I picture all those attributes posing considerable challenges to a clinician. The different cultures, at times perhaps antagonistic cultures and religious influences. Certainly the different languages would be challenging. You've mentioned that the clinic is in an underprivileged area of Tel Aviv, which of course presents its own challenges. And on top of it, you as an analyst are always attentive to the intrapsychic aspects that infiltrate and impact these cultural perceptions, which is quite a full plate. Can you tell us, paint a picture for us of this daycare center, the people in it, where they come from, the staff, the kinds of clinical problems you're presented with, the supervision you do, and actually the hands-on clinical work that you do. And after we discuss that, I think it would be great if you're comfortable to share with us a bit about your own background and what it is that brought within you to this really fascinating and challenging work.
So the center is located in Yafo, which is one of the most diverse districts of Tel Aviv. with heterogeneous population of Jews and Arabs, as well as multicultural population, immigrants and work refugees and migrant workers. It makes our work very interesting, but very hard, because we have to face all these multicultural ways of being, or ways of being together, or ways of parenting. So sometimes we even see patients which we can't speak to because we don't know their language. And then we have to bring somebody that will tell us what they say. So it makes it difficult. It's not like, sitting in the office and speaking your own language. The daycares is a collaboration we made with VITO, which is the Israeli leading organization for education and social services that runs 183 daycares. And we work in daycares that called multipurpose daycare centers, that caters children at risk from families under the care of welfare authorities and offers full day program from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. to these children. So sometimes this is almost the only home that these children has.
And the age of the children is what?
The ages when children is from 6 months old to four.
Uh-huh. And is there any charge for the families?
No. The families that can't pay, can't pay. The family that can pay, it's something like 40% of welfare population. But the family that can't pay are helped by the government. And we give our treatment and interventions free of charge. When we can't speak the language, we usually make supervision for the nannies or the daycare staff, social workers, or sometimes, nurses that are coming in. But it makes communication very, very difficult. And also, there are some codes, some cultural codes that we learn only after some times, because there isn't anybody that can help us with it. So, for example, the Ethiopian population, they don't look at their baby's eyes. They don't face each other because it makes an evil eye. And they believe that they are not doing it. So something that it's really a major thing for us in the European culture is something that they can't do.
That's quite a powerful observation. I'm startled by it because, like you say, it's a big deal for us. And by that, what I think you mean is that it, in our understanding of child development, the gaze of the mother to a baby is vital as part of the bonding experience. And you're saying that culturally they don't or can't do that. And do you see, it's a peculiar testing ground, but what do you see as the outcome of their doing something that we would think would be problematic?
It is very hard to say because a lot of things are very, very different. For example, they don't talk too much to the children, to the babies too. Babies talk, or all these kind of gestures that we do with our babies, they usually don't do it. Sometimes they even, it looks as though they don't consider their babies as subjects, only as somebody that doesn't understand. In a lot of African cultures, it's like that.
Again, perhaps my questions are naive, but does the culture make up for this? That is that I'm imagining that while they don't do things that we think are vital for development, does the culture in some way ecologically embrace the baby so that while they don't get the gaze of the mother on the one hand, they do get X, which provides vital developmental energy for them?
Yes, I think so. In the villages of Africa, the very, very small children are always surrounded by other children. So they don't as much need the, you know, the adult or the parent nearby, because all the time there are, and one patient told me from very young age, they are going outside and play. We don't have to sit with them on the mattress and play and so on and so forth. So in many ways, you are right in what you're saying.
Okay. Forgive my diversion. It was just a fascinating fact that I'd never heard that engaged me. But you were describing the people and the challenges.
So sometimes we can't get into therapy because we don't understand the languages and we don't understand the culture at all. So we take patients that we can communicate with. And otherwise, for example, when we see a very large developmental disabilities, we try to diagnose them and send them to a developmental organization in the community where they have ways to talk to them. But we usually work with people that we can communicate with. Otherwise, we have the other intervention that we do with the student in the Academic College of Tel Aviv Yafo, which are coming to the center, to the day center, every week for an academic year, and they escort little children, you know, playing with them, talking with them, singing with them. And this is not it's an intervention, but and it's sometimes very therapeutic, but they don't need actually to understand the language because they do other things.
It's their presence and it's the melody, it's not the words.
And it's the setting, you know, coming every week, a week after week. So the little children and the babies are getting used to them and they are playing with them. So it's not like having a conversation with the mother. It's more playing and intervene with the with the babies and the toddlers.
And these are undergraduate students who have expressed interest in psychotherapy or dynamic therapy. Who are the students?
They're BA students that are interested in a paratherapeutic world and involvement in the nearby community and also involved with young children. So they come once a week for 45 minutes for a whole year, and I supervise them and give them basic information, theoretical information about infant development and parent infant psychotherapy. And they are very happy with it because, you know, it's an experience-based course, seminar, that they don't have these kinds of seminars in the college.
One of the themes I learn about in conducting these interviews with people from all over the world is what you just touched on. That is that the undergraduate population is a source of potential inspiration. This came out in an interview that hasn't been aired yet, but it will be soon. Two students who were exposed to psychodynamic thinking in their work in Tehran. And I mentioned at that interview here in Philadelphia and throughout the states, there are growing programs on the undergraduate level that alerts people to the aliveness and the fascinating aspects of immersing yourself in another person's mind, both subjectively and also objectively. It's that unique combination, which is what you're describing, is really very exciting for a lot of students, but maybe for another time. So yes, so you have these people, and what kind of problems do they present with?
Language problems, children that don't speak, feeding, eating problems, aggression, isolation in the daycare class, miscommunication, and all this kind of crying a lot. Problems coping with the daycare routine, actually, and with other children or with the nannies. So a lot of diversity of problems that we see in the daycares.
And your interventions are both with the young child and the mother, father, family members, siblings, or how do you figure that out?
The professional team which is built on two clinical child psychologists, one Arab social worker, clinical social worker, and a developmental psychologist. We see usually a dyad or triad of the baby or the toddler with his parents. Usually the father doesn't come. So we see the mother and the child. And the students are escorting only the children, so they don't have to, to have contact with the mother. They're doing it in the daycare, in the usually daily routine in the daycare.
You mentioned the Arab clinician. Is that because the Arab patients relate more comfortably to the Arab clinician? Is that why you specify that, or that's important?
I thought it's very important for us to work with a Arab clinician in order to understand more the Arab population. And also, as I said, the Arab population is special and has some unique problems working with the Israelis because of all the complicated and delicate relationship between Arabs and Jewish in Israel. So it's much easier for them to relate to Arab clinical to Arab clinician than to Israeli one. And also she teaches us about the culture, the Arab culture, you know, the way they bring children, what is parenthood for them, what is a child, and so on. And she's going to have academic work, research, content research about these matters.
Fascinating.
But when I first founded the center, my aim was to work together with the Arab population because of the delicate relationship between us. As the work evolved, we saw that we can't concentrate only on the Arab population, the Arab and the Jewish, of course, and we have to address some other populations, like the Ethiopian, the Soviet Union immigrants, the immigrants from Africa, from South America, all kinds of populations.
Can you give us a clinical example of work that you've done that will give us a flavor of your work in particular? And this is something I've asked others I've interviewed, which is, what is it about being a psychoanalyst that you think helps you in a unique way reach people and help people grow?
So first I'll talk about the case material and then I'll answer your question. So this year I was treating an 8-month-old baby girl and her mother of Ethiopian origin. The mother was 32 years old. She was immigrated to Israel at the age of 8 with her father and his new wife and 6 half-brothers. The mother grew up in her father's family until the age of 13 when she was transferred to foster family after being raped by her stepfather, brother. Then, as a young adult, she engaged in drug abuse and prostitution. And after a few years, she tried to seek help and went under a significant rehabilitation and treatment. She studied profession and worked for her living. And the baby's father was a 40-year-old illegal immigrant from Nigeria that was arrested and deported back to Nigeria before the birth of his daughter. The mother wanted the baby very much and since then was very dedicated to her. The first thing that stood out when I met them was that the mother and her baby's girl had the same name, like Anne and Annie. This fact intensified in their behavior, and I remember having the picture in my mind during the first sessions that they were glued together. The mother was very introverted, close, passive, and seemed paralyzed with fear in the interaction with her baby and with me. it looked as though she didn't have an internal model or knowledge how to be a mother. And she didn't know what to do with her daughter except feeding her, bottle feeding her, and putting her to sleep. And I remember thinking that she was torn from her own mother and her African village at a very early age. And since she had experienced a traumatic experiences with the parental figures, the baby girl was alike. She looked physically well-kept and dressed, although because of the excessive feeding, her clothes became very quickly too small, and that made her movement even more difficult. She sat most of our first meetings on her mother's lap, facing me, without any movement or mimics on her face. She didn't smile, she didn't cry, and hardly looked at the mother's face. I asked the mother what I told you before about this cultural code, and she said she doesn't know what it means because she came to Israel when she was a girl, so it didn't mean anything to her. It was only a symptom in this case, not the cultural feature. When I tried to interact with the baby, she just gazed at me with no reaction. So during our first meeting, when I asked the mother if it would be okay for her if we sat with the baby on the mattress, and the mother reluctantly did that, but watched every movement of the baby as if the baby was in danger. The muscle tones of the baby was very heavy and slow, and she didn't move. She just picked a toy, put it down, up and down, without any play. It seems that the baby has no passion or energy for life, and no mother's face that will invite her for a relationship. She was caught in her mother's fear and depression and emptiness that imprisoned her. And also it was very clear that the baby has a major developmental delays, but I felt that it will take some time before I could talk to the mother about it. So in our following few first sessions, I thought I should be sensitive, accessible, and alive, you know, like Ana Alvarez says, in order to enable the baby to wake up and to start moving something inside that will bring up her potentials and start to be, and for the mother to take the risk of being a mother. I thought that's what I thought was my target. So we sat on the floor, a mother facing a daughter, and I'm on the side, and I focused on the baby's action, responding, helping to bring the toys near her, making babies talk, trying to interact with her, while commenting to the mother my enthusiasm and understanding of her baby's gesture.
You brought the affect.
Yeah. And I encouraged the mother to be my partner in observing and thinking about her baby and playing with her. The mother reacted quite quickly to the therapy and started to tell me what they did during the week. And after a while, she started bringing questions related to caring for her child. But I felt that although the mother gained enough confidence in me and in therapy, the little girl didn't react the same. I was very worried about her. I thought that her developmental delinquencies are very prominent. So when I felt it's all right, I said to the mother that I feel that she is very afraid and worried to make a mistake with her baby, and that she feels that she will be blamed for her baby if it will be hurt. And later I added that maybe it was related to her having a very traumatic experience as a child when no one has been there to protect and take care of her during those times. The mother didn't respond at first, but at the end of this session, she asked me in a wonder how I knew such a thing.
I guess you've answered my question about what it is about being a psychoanalyst that uniquely allows for deep interventions. That's really quite lovely.
So after a while, and although the baby made some attempt to move away from the mother, I asked the mother, I knew I couldn't send her to Institute of Child Development because she will interpret it as if I think she's a bad mother. So I told her I wanted to bring into our next session an occupational therapist from my team in order to be sure we are doing everything we can for her baby. She agreed more willingly, I must say, than I thought. And the next few sessions, we all worked together with the baby. I was in the room too, a thing that I not usually do, but I felt that I have to be there to assure the mother. While the occupational therapist was trying to improve the baby's motility through exercise, play, and songs involving hands and feet movement. And she also taught the mother what was very important. She taught the mother some exercise to do at home, so the mother felt more competent and helping her child. But it was interesting that after a few sessions, the physical work was hard for the baby that was used to of being helped, either she needed it or not, by her mother. And she started making sounds of protest. And I thought, in my mind, I thought the voices in my head saying that we torture the little girl, which I understood as the mother's fantasies. The mother was alert and anxious, and I felt she needed to hear my voice and understanding of how difficult it is for her to give her baby to a stranger and to contain her instinct to save her. And I saw her sometimes withdrawing into herself, cold and suspicious, listening to me, but in an internal struggle. But then, after a few sessions, when this was over, the baby started crying for the first time in my presence. And I was very surprised when the mother got closer to her. She didn't take her to her lap. She came to her, closer to her, touched her gently, and whispered in her ear, "You are a fighter. You can do it." Which is something that I was amazed to hear from this mother, you know, this articulation of a thought. And then the mother raised her head and smiled, a beautiful smile to me.
Well, but is it your sense, forgive me for interrupting, but is it your sense that she was engaging her child in her version of the way she felt you engaged her?
Yes, I think there was something that she internalized, my being with her, that helps her learn intuitively how to be with her daughter. And after that, the baby started to progress more rapidly, and I felt that the space, you know, the space of bringing in another person, of touching the baby, and all these kind of things that she never allowed, created some space between them that allowed the baby to move further from her mother and to take a risk of trying to stand up, to fall, and to try again. And with that, a wide range of emotional and facial expression emerged. And what I found most moving was that after the baby girl was moving away, she would look for her mother and approach her, climbing on her and hugging her passionately as if they started to have a relationship. Only when they were separated, they could start a relationship. And lately, the mother told me that she asked for a meeting with the daycare social worker because she thinks the nannies mistreat her daughter. And I said to her, "I'm excited to see that you are not afraid anymore to be a fighter yourself, to keep your right and your daughter's right, so that will never be violated again.
And she now knows what it's like to actually care for her daughter.
Right. And for herself. And she could gain her strength back.
Chamutal, it's such a moving story. I'm sure the listeners are as touched and impressed and moved by the work you're describing as I feel.
I think, of course, psychoanalysis offers us a very powerful tool, a theoretical one and practical one, for the field of treating parents and babies in way of thinking about, you know, like development, needs, drive, body, psyche, the metrics of a relationship between inner world and outer and reality, etc. And it's not only the way we think or the way we listen, it's also the way we act or transform the information that is given to us. For example, for me, actually, it is the unique way which is different for each dyad, that I meet the metrics of maturational processes vis-a-vis the facilitating environment, in the words of Winnicott, of mother and her baby. For example, in the vignette that I present, I didn't work only on removal of symptoms or making the mother and the baby function better. I had to be the facilitating environment for both of them, containing and processing in me the mother unconscious, aggressive and intrusive fantasies, her intergeneration traumas, transferring to the baby, and the baby's fear and potentials that no one had seen and was for a long time an unthought known, in Ebola's words, held by me.
You know, it's interesting because we talk about this work as analysis off the couch, but everything you just described is the essence of analysis in the consulting room. It just happened to be applied outside of it, but there's nothing you've described different for a certain kind of patient population that is different from what we understand psychoanalysis to be.
I think it's more active. I think all this information is transformed and determined the way I intervene with each one of them and both. But it comes to the sound of my voice, that searching for language that will be understood, the space I left between me and them when I decide where I sit in the session, things I decide to interpret and things I didn't, and of course the suspension of my memories and desire in Beyond Words. But I think in working with the babies, you are more active and you're more sensitive to body language and to smells and to all these kind of primitive features.
You know, you talk about, in a sense, the countertransference to the person and the experience. I'm sitting here listening to you and I have a big smile on my face because what you're describing is, you're describing it so beautifully and so productively for this person. But I do want to get to you. I mean, okay, I want to get to you more directly. So tell our listeners who you are, how you get to this work, and I will underline what you told me, which is you do this gratis. So that's a piece of the picture. So share with us how you get here.
I'm a supervised psychoanalyst in the Israeli Psychoanalytic Society. And what brought me to this project is quite interesting because it's important to me to say that when I started the project, I was not aware of how deep are my personal roots that connect me to it. Only later, while working in this field and thinking about this question, I discovered it. So I was born in a kibbutz. The children in the kibbutz at my time were raised separately from their parents from birth. So the parents saw their children only for a few hours in the afternoon, bringing them back and then bringing them back to sleep at the daycare in the kindergarten. And today it really looks crazy. And that's probably answered the question why I chose to rescue babies, but it's but it's not all the story. When giving birth, my mother had a severe postpartum depression and had difficulties taking care of me. And maybe in my case, the kibbutz wasn't that bad solution, maybe.
That's sort of what I meant about the Ethiopian culture making up for the deficiencies, or what we might call deficiencies, the lack of connectedness. The community comes in.
Right. And the last connection that I can think of now is that my parents were idealistic socialists and social activists that believed they can change the world. And that also was the atmosphere in the kibbutz in those days. So maybe I got some of that too. I remember that when I was doing my psychoanalytic training and I got my supervision from a very respectable lady trainer, I was young and very passionate and enthusiastic about psychoanalysis, and told her that my passion was to make street psychoanalysis, meaning that taking this powerful tool outside the clinic. I think she was, because I felt it's such a brilliant tool. So she was quite shocked, I think, and I'm not sure she liked it so much. But you see, I'm here doing it anyway.
You are here, and not only are you here, but the inaugural interview for this podcast was with Virginia Unger, the president of the IPA, and she said almost the exact same words that you did, that we have a precious tool, and the tool can offer great help to people, not only in the office, but also what you call, your word now is street psychoanalysis. So you're in very good company. And not only that, of course, Freud made reference to it as well, the importance of bringing psychoanalysis to the community. You have brought your passion to your work, and it's quite clear that your patients have benefited dramatically. Hopefully the people listening to this will also benefit by it, and your passion will spread beyond the daycare center that you contribute so much to.
Thank you very much.
Chamutal, thank you. It really has been a pleasure and an honor, and perhaps we'll do this again.
Thank you very much. It was an honor for me too.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.